Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Jennifer Howard, who is the author of Your Ultimate Life Plan, How to Deeply Transform Your Everyday Experience and Create Changes That Last. Dr. Howard is basically a life coach, teacher of the art of conscious living. She is a psychotherapist, a professional speaker, and she has created a award-nominated radio talk show, A Conscious Life, to get her message out. The book draws from many, many different spiritual traditions, talking about how we can become conscious, more conscious of, and more mindful of not just our physical lives, but also our emotional and mental lives. And she breaks down this into a plan and basically teaches you how to do it. I think it's a great contribution, especially in this time when we are being asked to become more conscious creators of our lives and the world we live in. Thanks, Jennifer, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan. You know, I want to also compliment you. I went to your website, and you're doing a lot of great work out there, and it's really nice to meet you.
Well, thank you.
To meet another doctor. I mean, you're an MD, and I'm a PhD, but another doctor that really sees the bigger picture, which is amazing, and how lucky are your patients?
Well, thank you. My mother was actually a child psychologist, PhD, taught at the University of Kansas, and I was in junior high when she got her PhD, so I read all her books, and I helped her with her dissertation, and I helped her with her research projects. She was actually an operant behavioralist, and I met B.S. Skinner at one time when he came to the university. So, I mean, it's not real spiritually based like what you're doing, but it certainly introduced me to all of psychology, you know, from Jung to, I mean, the whole gamut, at least, what was present at that time. Of course, that was in the 70s, so a lot's been done in psychology since then. And I'm really pleased to see how much spirituality is and energetics is being introduced into psychology.
Me too.
It's really
evolving
a lot. Yeah.
Seeing the bigger picture. I mean, that's what I wanted to do with this book was, you know, like in chapter 4, speaking of all the different ego ways to think about the ego, I talk about Jung and many different theories. It's short versions, of course, you know, a paragraph here,
sure,
a paragraph there. But to give people that feel for, they're both important. Psychology has so much to give us, and so does spirituality.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of people are tired of just living day to day, you know, kind of just the basic trying to get ahead, you know, the kind of finding themselves basically unhappy. You talk about that in the early part of your book, that, you know, there are ways that we can see things so that we don't just feel like we're a little hamster on a wheel. And I think that's really important to do right now.
More than ever. I mean, it's always been important to do, but I think we're coming into a new part of the world where you can be more of a hamster than you ever were. I mean, I know technology is supposed to make things better and easier for us, but in some ways it's made things more speedy, and people are so busy that they forget or don't know or have never learned, or their parents didn't teach them how to be present, how to just notice themselves, how to be introspective. I mean, it's such an external world we live in, and so many people, unless you're naturally kind of an introvert, are so external. And even a lot of introverts aren't, they may be quiet, but they're not necessarily in touch with themselves.
Yeah, I don't think people understand that there is a guidance system within you that has a great deal more information than you have consciously, that can help you out with not only, you know, day-to-day living and getting things that you need, but also, you know, can help you solve serious problems, you know, like if you find yourself without a job, if you find yourself homeless, if you find yourself, you know, in a bad business relationship, this inner guidance system can lead you out of it. If you find yourself with cancer, you know, if you have
Absolutely.
A serious health issue.
Well, you know,
people don't realize that.
And I appreciate you saying that. Chapter 5, I talk about the difference between that inner voice that's connected with our wounding. That would be the inner voice that said, eat more ice cream. I mean, I'm being silly as an example, but, you know, that inner voice that's not really guiding us to do our highest. And the difference mm-hmm. between that and that deep inner guidance, which is what you're talking about, which is connected with our higher or deeper self, which is more right. of the truth of who we really are. And I think it's very hard for people, unless they spend some time, to discern the difference. You know, it's subtle sometimes. I should marry that same husband again, even though his name is George mm-hmm. this time. And I'm convinced in the beginning he's completely different. But then I get into this relationship and it doesn't work again because I'm not aware of that inner programming that's going on inside all the time.
Yeah, Michael Rice wrote a book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Which is mm-hmm. the perfect, you know, the perfect question to ask yourself. If you've done the same thing, if you've married the same man 5 times, then you need to think about what it is you have to learn so that the next one perhaps will be more closer to your ideal mate. You know, and you talk about that in Chapter 3. Everything's an inside job. You know, it's the external world is just a reflection of what you're working on inside. So
exactly.
He talks about the geographical solution, you know, thinking that if you move across the country, somehow that's all going to change.
Absolutely.
But that rarely happens, you know.
Well, no, totally, because we take ourselves everywhere we go. But the 12-step program would call that doing a geographic.
Right.
That came from the 12-step
right.
program that said that. And I think that's so important what you're saying. And in Chapter 1, I talk a little bit about there's hidden payoffs. If you're not changing, if things really aren't changing, you either don't know how to look at yourself, you're just lost and can't figure out, you know, where to do what. And this book gives you so many mm-hmm. exercises and so many meditations. I'm trying to get it every direction. But there's also reasons why we don't. Like I realized a long time ago, early on when I started studying metaphysics, that I wasn't making very much money because inside I didn't feel good about making more money than my dad did.
Mm-hmm.
So there's these inner beliefs and inner, you know, kind of things that are simple. Like sometimes you just go, oh, my goodness, I don't have to make that agreement internally with my dad. He doesn't care. He's happy when
right.
I make money. And then that makes the shift.
Yeah.
So sometimes we don't know these things, though, you know.
Well, and that's why becoming more conscious is so important. You know, so much of the average person's life is directed by the unconscious or the subconscious,
absolutely.
Especially the subconscious. You know, you can get in touch with it through, you know, certain, you know, techniques like hypnosis and other things like meditation, which you've got a lot of good meditations in here. But you'll get these aha moments where you're in meditation and then you'll link up 4 different things and realize it was the same driving factor between, you know, behind all 4 of them. And then
yes.
it will be clear to you that was the cause of all these effects in your life. And that, and then if you meditate a little bit longer, you'll figure out how to undo that. You know, it's really
absolutely.
Interesting.
Or have a good coach or a good psychotherapist that can kind of point
right.
out the places you're not seeing. And what you said was so important just then. There's a pattern to things that we do. That's why we do the mm-hmm. same. That's why we marry the same person. And listen, we're going to marry the best and worst of our mother and father, no matter what we do. That's what we're going to do.
Right.
But if we do our work, we can marry up the food chain. We can marry a more evolved version of it.
That's funny. Marry up the food chain. I like that. That's great. So getting to the point where you can actually observe yourself making these decisions, you know, having these feelings, what's the best way to do that, to actually get that observer in there so that you can not just have everything happen to you all the time?
Well, I think it's a combination of several things. I think it's, like I said, either having a coach or a therapist or somebody that calls you on where you're blind. I think it's a daily practice, and it doesn't have meditation practice, and I have a million of them in here, but something that suits you, even if it's 10 minutes a day. And then I think it's also threading awareness through your day when you're standing in line at the bank, when you're in your car, when you're standing on the subway platform, when you're wherever you are, when you're walking somewhere. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? Where am I going? Because we have this, you know, these thoughts run away with us. We can always find out what we're thinking and pay attention to where are my thoughts. And often they're recircling the worries of our life. I didn't do this. I need to do that. I don't have enough money. It's not going to work out. They're not going to love me. They hate me. They're, you know, it's just, and we're, and we don't even know we're doing these thoughts. So to really thread it through your day while you're gardening, while you're taking a walk, I mean, it's being willing to say, I'm going to try to stay present, and I'm going to do it both ways. Because when you sit, there's something that happens deeply when you're willing to sit, even for 10 minutes a day. Now, often we really learn that we need more than 10 minutes a day. But if we start there, we can see, gosh, I'm so antsy. I don't want to sit. I don't want to get up. I have the excuse. I got to get this done. I got to get that done. And then continue to say, it's okay. It's okay. Sometimes I tell people to set a timer.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So let's talk a little bit about mindfulness. You touched on it there. Becoming mindful, what does that mean?
I guess, in essence, knowing our mind, right? But really becoming awake and aware. I mean, mindfulness is a practice that helps us become aware of who we are, what we're thinking, and that thing you started with, which is that we're much wiser than we know. But often we have to walk through the briar patch to get to that wisdom. So that awareness, that being aware of your thoughts and your feelings, noticing where you are, noticing your day. I have some mindfulness practices in here where you stop, the stopping practice, which is a Buddhist practice, and I have it like four different ways, but stop right now. Take a breath. What do you notice? What were you thinking? What do you notice around? You know, if you're driving, please notice the car in front of you. But, you know, what are you feeling? I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling sad. And any time, and I say this in the book, but people will say, a client said it to me yesterday, I'm feeling that. Anytime you put the word that in front of it, it's not a feeling. That would be a thought. So knowing the difference between our feelings and our thoughts are very important because they work together in tandem. But we want to know this is what I'm thinking and this is what I'm feeling. Because as we can, this is why I talk about the four dimensions of consciousness. If we can tease this stuff apart, obviously it's all one thing, right? It's all one thing. On one level, everything's one thing. But if we can tease this apart for ourselves, it makes it easier for us to work with it and actually change it and actually become the person we're longing to be and living the life we're longing to live.
Now, in the book, I'm struggling to remember the first thing, but the second thing is a feeling. The third thing is an emotion. What was that first thing, that first aspect?
Oh, when I talk about feelings, the way they're broken down?
Right.
It's called,
right.
It's an affect.
Affect, that's right. I know it was a short word.
let's
talk about that. That's really interesting.
Well, an affect is before you can name it. And I think many of us, if you're listening and you have a knee-jerk reaction to things, let's say you yell at people or you get angry easily or you people will tell you you have that shaming tone in your voice, you were having an affect because you didn't know you were having a feeling or an emotion. By the time we get to feeling and emotion, we can name it and work with it. We want to move it out of the amygdala, out of the old brain, out of the primitive brain, into the frontal lobe, which allows us to name it and work with it. So an affect, and when we grow up with, you know, pretty dysfunctional families, we'll have affect storms where we don't even know what we're feeling, or we're so anxious, or we're so angry that it's just taking us over. And I tell my clients, when you're having an affect storm, it kind of feels like you're going to feel this way forever. People say, I'm scared to feel my sadness. I'll feel sad forever. that would be an mm-hmm. affect storm, because you're not going to feel sad forever. If you truly feel your feelings, feelings move. They are like clouds in the sky. They literally move and disappear. Mm-hmm. So that's that
so
early.
Mm-hmm. Very early. And then, so when you have some sort of discomfort with what's going on, then you try to identify the feeling. You start to become mindful. You'll identify what is the feeling.
Right. And I have a whole grouping here of feelings, I think later in the book, because I realize people don't know their feeling words. I mean, it was weird, and I look for books for it, and there aren't any books out there, really. Like, what are my feelings? Well, there are 5 or 6 primary ones, and then the rest of them kind of branch off from there. And I always tell everybody it's better to get it down to the earliest feeling, to the most primitive feeling, to the deepest feeling in us. And often people, especially men, but even women, go to anger. It's a feeling, but sometimes it's a defense. And underneath that anger is actually a more vulnerable feeling, or a fear, or, you know, often a fear, something they're scared of, or something's going to happen to them. And this is not real. You know, this is inside of us from our childhood. This is a programming thing. This isn't like really the person's going to hit us, but we might be afraid they're going to hit us because of what we grew up with. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We have
a technical issue there. Okay. I lost you for a little while, so...
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yeah. It was good. You were talking.
I was talking.
So there you go. So we were talking about feelings and how the different kinds of feelings. Can you just sum up, because I didn't hear what you last said?
That's okay. Yes. What I was talking about is many people... I wrote a whole section in here about feelings because people don't know the words for their feelings. So I gave them basic mm-hmm. words, like the top 5 that I think it breaks down to, and then the ones that kind of branch from there. I also said that often, especially with men, but sometimes with women too, anger ends up leading, and it's actually something else underneath. People will say, you know, I'm angry or I'm irritated, and underneath it is that they're scared or sad or some more vulnerable feeling
right. yeah.
that they have to defend against.
Mm-hmm. And there is a real interesting thing about shame, because there's a lot of psychologists who feel that when people are feeling shame, they'll often engage in addictive behaviors. And so shame can be underneath, you know, a lot of different addictions. What do you think about that?
I think, you know, any of them can be underneath addictions. Some people just don't want to feel their sadness, their grief. They might drink.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of alcoholism after a spouse dies because people don't want to feel their grief.
True.
So I think to limit it to shame and addiction is a little. And also shame is kind of a cluster of feelings, isn't it? It's kind of a sadness. It's kind of a panic. It's kind of a... shaky ground, fearful, I'm going to be not loved, abandonment. It's a lot of things in one thing, that shame. It's so important. And you know, I got to tell you, it's a huge one for everybody. I mean, everybody has flavors of it. There's nobody, I think, that gets by without having some shame.
Yeah. Well, it's more complex, definitely, than just fear. Fear can be purely physical. I remember I was in Sedona, and my roommate and I were hiking around, and we climbed up on this really tall, what are those things called that, you know, go way up there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyway, I climbed up, and then I realized that we couldn't probably get back down. It's a different thing. It's kind of like a cat. You know, you go up, but you can't come back down.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel fear, but my hands were sweating. And so I knew my body was afraid. Isn't that interesting?
Well, you know what then? That means in that moment, you probably, because you were in survival, were not as in touch with that fear because it was there. Emotionally, it was there too. Your body
it was
maybe
definitely
had been
there.
Your signal. Yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't that
yeah.
interesting?
And it's interesting because, we were alone. There was nobody around. And then all of a sudden, a group of people appeared and they helped us down. I thought that was fascinating. It's not like an ending that I would have thought. But yeah, so sometimes you get yourself in situations that are purely physical-based fear. And then other, you know, more often it's more complicated. You know, it's an emotional fear. That's, you know, it's a more of an emotional.
Well, even those physical fears are emotional, even though we're not in touch with them. That's what I'm trying to say. We
right.
may not be in touch with the fear around our physical safety.
Mm-hmm.
But there's
True.
A lot of emotional fear around whether I'm going to die or not. We don't want to die. You might die out there if you can't get down.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was interesting because it was like mm-hmm. on the seventh day of a fast, and I mean a water fast, not a juice
wow.
fast. So we were both in a very, very different consciousness state. Okay.
Yes.
That's probably why I didn't feel the physical fear.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was so, you know, in an altered state. Yeah, but I looked at my hands and I said, you know, I must be afraid because my palms are sweaty. You know, mm-hmm. why else would you have that reaction? You know, unless you were
mm-hmm.
afraid. It was interesting. So that was pure physical without the emotional aspect. And then you know, then we created the solution. You know, the solution was right there, and we got down no trouble because they helped us down. But, you know,
that's
it
great.
Very interesting. So when you're out there in Sedona, don't climb up on things you can't get down from.
Moral of the
unless
story.
You can create, mm-hmm. unless you can create the solution. So, yeah, so shame is a more complex complex emotion than some of the other ones are.
I think there's a difference between guilt and shame, and I talk a little bit about mm-hmm. that. But healthy shame or unhealthy shame, depending on what you want, it's important to feel bad when you do something to hurt someone.
Right.
That's healthy to say, I hurt you, even unintentionally, and I feel bad about that. I'm so sorry I hurt your feelings.
Right.
Especially
that's
if
guilt.
I did something bad.
Yeah, that's guilt. Shame doesn't have the, you know, the way out, you know, the apology out as much.
Right.
You know,
it's also, right. I just feel terrible about myself. I just feel like I'm no
yeah.
good. And that's the shame.
Yeah.
It's a powerful driver. But, you know, all these things are driving us to heal, aren't they? They're all driving us to be better.
They are. So what do you make of the sociopath, someone who doesn't feel any of these things?
Well, bless their hearts. I mean, I feel bad for them and bad for us. I've had some people who were quite psychopathic, not completely sociopaths, but had degrees of it in my practice through the years. They don't come into therapy on their own. They usually are brought in by a spouse
right,
or something
yeah.
else.
Court-ordered therapy, huh?
Well, I never had court-ordered, but yeah, same thing. You know, they didn't learn from their parents, and the structure of the house was so violent or so ignored or so mm-hmm. some version of something that they couldn't develop that sense of, oh, I'm sorry, I hurt you. And I was
right.
just talking to a client this week about their own little child who's going to learn this. I know because this is a good parent. He'll teach him. But this parent hurt his foot really bad and was writhing on the floor in pain, and this little boy, who's not quite two, came over and hit him on the head and started banging on him. And, you know, that's
really?
a teaching moment where you teach a child, oh, you know, daddy has a boo-boo, very painful, hurts very bad. Oh, we don't like boo-boos. Oh, they hurt. So you're teaching them, oh, other people hurt. Oh, so they
right.
start connecting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
True.
And I feel bad for sociopaths. I mean, they have a hard life, and we have a hard life if we have to be around them. It's very sad to me. It makes me want to cry. It's very sad. They don't have the sense of compassion. They can't feel that at this point. I mean, I believe you can heal anything if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have to see what they're missing or not be so sick that they can see, oh, gosh, this other person's doing this. That looks good. What is that?
Mm-hmm. Now, in your starting in chapter 7, you talk about four different dimensions that you know, that are important to, I guess, notice, concentrate on, and then move forward into the next one. These are the action, physical dimension, the formation, emotional dimension, creation, mental dimension, and emanation, spiritual dimension. You want to talk a little bit about that and how you maneuver through those four dimensions?
Yes. And what you said is absolutely true, and yet forever we will have slivers that need to be healed that will be in all four dimensions. So we don't exactly move completely linear.
Okay.
And that's true the other way around, too, that in any given moment, wholeness is available from the holographic viewpoint, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wholeness is available in this moment. Grace is always here and present, and we can tune into that grace in the moment. And that's a saving grace for us, not to make a pun here, but that's saving us in a way, because sometimes in the throes of disaster and horrible and our feelings and sadness and grief and, you know, the worst of us, we have that grace available. At the same time, when we're in the largest expansive place, there's parts of us that still have are arrested in development. That's the human journey as far as I'm concerned. But that said, the linear version, and it's important to understand, the action physical is not just our physical world, although that's true too, but it was that mindset, and that's what you're referring to, that we grow out of, that we can elevate ourselves, grow past, expand past, deepen into whatever the next dimension. For instance, I think it's an interesting way to think about God in those four dimensions and the way someone in a mindset would view that, that action physical is a very narrow viewpoint, a very black and white thinking, very right and wrong, you know, very fundamental end of the spectrum in religions. You know, this is I am right and you are wrong and I'm going to kill you because you're wrong and you're threatening me. So it's very tribal.
So it's Old Testament.
Old Testament, very very tribal. I have to kill your tribe because it's very primitive psychologically, you know, primitive emotionally and spiritually. And God is somewhere out there very far and I very scary, and I have to be forgiven because I'm terrible. You know, it's kind of a shame-based thing. And then as we move into the next dimension up, which would be the formation emotional, that's when we move into understanding life has meaning. Maybe that tribe, I can connect to that tribe in a different way. I call this the tribe of man. I can see that you and I, Susan, have many things we agree on. We may have things we disagree on, but there's also common ground we can find. And when I'm sad or I hurt or something bad happens, maybe it has a lesson in it for me. So that's a huge leap from the action physical into the formation emotional dimension, and we know our feelings in that dimension. That's the emotional realm. Then we move into, and God, by the way, in this dimension, is inside of us and outside of us. So there's that's a huge leap. You know, we can connect to it inside. Then we move into the creation mental, where we, at the early end of the spectrum, look at belief systems and the systems that programming that I talk about that kind of run the show. And at the upper end of the spectrum, we really are looking at the origin of our thoughts and how we end up pulling those same thoughts, why we marry that same person five times. We see where we make that choice so we can actually choose differently. It's really at the realm of creation from, and the Kabbalistic way to say it would be creating something from nothing. So we're right on the edge of that something-nothing border, which takes us into the next dimension. But God from the creation mental begins to be all one thing. Not quite there completely, but we see where it's everywhere. And not just pantheistic necessarily, but we can see the connections. Does that make sense?
It does. And one thing, if you have certain belief systems that are probably out of whack, you know, if you believe, you know, all doctors are bad or all, you know, all homosexuals are damned for all times or, you know, any of the many belief systems that people hold, that will completely change the way you, the way you are able to, you know, I guess it probably starts in the creation mental dimension, but it'll start to really change your perceptual reality and then things will come back at you that will allow you to clear that belief system.
Well, and I think what you're talking about is so large that that starts to unravel, actually, when you move into formation emotional.
Yeah, because, it probably does. You're right.
Because you have some thoughts. It's not no thoughts in there. It's just mostly an emotional. Yeah, because you see, oh, all homosexuals can't be bad because I know one and I like him, her.
Mm-hmm.
I see this person on television. They're doing good things and they're gay. Oh. So you start to be able to have an ability to see yourself and self-reflect in that second dimension, mm-hmm. which I think would help unravel this. These belief systems, the ones you're talking about too, but really looking at our own deeper, those beliefs that we don't even know are going on all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of an example, but what you're talking about and really looking at the whole structure of the way we live our lives and how we think that's reality. And then this takes us, this something to nothing border takes us into the next dimension, which is the spiritual. And this spiritual dimension, emanation spiritual, I'm talking about is the, I have a quote here from, I don't know where it is, Father Thomas Keating, I think actually it's earlier in the book, but I could just say in this chapter, sit and be still. Be with the inner stillness mm-hmm. that informs us.
Right.
But since it was a words and there's a book here, I'm helping people figure out how to be here. So this is really about all at one moment. God is here now. It's all one thing. This is about it really. And at the ultimate, we embody spirit, meaning this emanates all the way down to the physical dimension, and we become God embodied. And I think that's what Christ did, right? And many other wonderful leaders and teachers, Buddha, I think, did that too, became God embodied. And once you know that, there's this kindness and loveliness. Watch the Dalai Lama, how kind and lovely he always mm-hmm. is. So I think there's this whole transformation that happens physically also at the deepest, deepest realm.
Right, that's true. Right. Yeah, if you do read the books that the Dalai Lama puts out and watch him speak, you really can see the emanation spiritual dimension coming forth. It's very interesting.
Well, and people talk about going with the river, and that's what we want. That's the experience. But when we go a step deeper into this emanation spiritual, we not only travel with the river, we realize we are the river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And this is really, as I'm talking to your listeners, and this is really a transmission through here. You know, this is an experience of God. That's why all the mystics say the same things. Whether you read Christian mysticism or you read Rumi and Sufi mystics or Hafiz, or you read the Kabbalistic, ancient Kabbalistic texts, they all basically say the same language, slightly different, but because that experience of God is universal. It's not it's not path oriented or denomination oriented.
Right. I also want to mention that there is a physical phenomena that occurs with that river of consciousness that some people mistake for a physical problem, and that a high pitched buzzing that is actually G, I think it's G flat or something. I interviewed Dr. Laszlo, and he's got perfect pitch, and he was telling me exactly what it is. But that the people who've lived and experienced this spiritual dimension say that all say the same thing about it. It's like a buzzing of bees. But more and more of us right now, and sometimes people who really haven't even thought about exploring spirituality, are hearing this now, and it gets very, very loud when the energy stream is very dense, or whatever you want to call it, very active. The loudest I heard it was interesting. I was actually watching Obama give a speech before he was elected. I was sitting in a chair, and I had my hand over my uterus, over the area of my uterus, and the entire chair started to shake. I mean, it was just like everything was shaking. And I brought my hand up and realized there was an energy stream coming through my hand, and later on found out it was to heal my uterus because it had some fibroids in it. And what was interesting is that during the time of this energy stream, which was really, I mean, it was so powerful, it was shaking me and the chair I was in, the sound current got really, really, really loud. It sounded like a train was coming in. And so I've talked to some other people who've had the same experience with an energy coming in through their hand.
Yes.
And this real loud noise. I mean, it gets really loud.
Yep.
And so if you're hearing a high-pitched noise,
mm-hmm.
Especially when you meditate or when you're in other spiritual practices, that's what you're hearing.
Well, I think if you read the Emanation Spiritual chapter, I talk about the symptoms of awakening your kundalini, which is what you're talking about. I mean, that's just
right.
Your shakti or your energy moving through. You don't have to call it kundalini. You can call it anything you want. But that's exactly what you're talking about, those pranas, that movement, that vibration. When I started to have, I've been kind of doing this path for a very long time. I started studying metaphysics in 1980. So I had that buzzing sound back in the 80s, and then I was opening to different realms. And then I have a hip replacement. So when my hip was really bad, I was doing breath work, and I started doing spontaneous yoga positions that I couldn't possibly mm-hmm. have gotten into because the hip was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that same thing you're talking about. I spontaneously, went into these positions as a part of my, that's how yoga was developed. It's a spontaneous opening that, when I would meditate a few years ago, I would have spontaneous mudras with my hand, and I don't even know mudras.
Mm. Right.
Not like I know them when I'm doing them.
Right. Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it? A lot of the spiritual practices may have just spontaneously occurred when people were in these altered states of consciousness.
Well, and eventually we don't want to have to live in an altered state. We want that altered state to be with us. I mean, I was talking to the Lama Suri Das on Wednesday on my radio show, and, we're talking about that eventually that's what I was talking about, when the emanation spiritual becomes one with us. And not that, and I'm mm-hmm. still saying there's places to heal always, but on our personality. But we bring that large expansiveness into every moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we
right.
go live somewhere else. We're bringing it into cooking the dinner and talking to our friends, and that inner deep silence becomes our constant companion that brings us
yeah.
inner peace. That's enlightenment. If you can embody that, that's it. That's all it is.
That's true.
She says.
And when you're in that energy, life is actually very, very pleasant. All the lights are green and everything just sort of flows and everything is smooth, and it's a very interesting place to be.
And I think taking it a moment further is that the light is red and I can still maintain that peace inside of me. And my
sure.
father dies
yeah.
and I can maintain that peace inside of me. And
right.
I lose my job
right.
and I can maintain it. Because it doesn't mean life, I don't mm-hmm. believe life becomes completely hunky-dory. We're still going to die.
But you don't. But your inner life is fine, no matter what's happening on your outer.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But when you're out of it, every light tends to be red. I mean, there is a lot of the outer world that becomes a lot easier to live in
yes,
if you're
yes,
in that
absolutely.
Stream.
Absolutely. I think what you're hearing in me is these years of all these books that kind of say, that tell people if they're living, if they've got it, their life is going to be perfect mm-hmm. and easy. And I think
that's probably not true.
It's not true.
Yeah,
it's misleading
true.
And
yeah.
it's hurtful, and I think it makes it impossible for people to grow and change. It makes them feel like, well, I'm a failure because, I lost my job then. I must not be in the flow. Well, maybe you lost your job because something better's coming. I don't know. Could be.
That's right. And the other thing, too, is if you study the lives of the masters, who are with us now or have been recently with us, Sai Baba had assassination attempts. Dalai Lama had to, sneak past the border to get out mm-hmm. of Tibet. I mean, these people's lives were not easy by any means.
Well,
so,
the great saints, if you read the Christian mystics,
drama.
Right. Well, the Christian mystics, they had a lot of physical illness. You know, sometimes physical illness is a teacher for us.
Right. That's true. And sometimes the Kundalini, especially back before this time, you know, if you want to look at the 1900s or even the 1800s, the early 1900s, it was difficult being spiritual in that energy stream. I think that physical illness, especially neurological illness, was very common in the people undergoing Kundalini shifts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they had this, whatever religious tradition they were in, you know, didn't always recognize that these things were happening.
Well, what you're saying is we have much more available to us. Right. And what you're saying is we have much more available to us, which is great.
Yeah, the Kundalini information, all the books on Kundalini out there have been very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
People come to me with these Kundalini symptoms, mm-hmm. and instead of running, you know, $10,000 worth of negative neurological tests on them, I actually just do energy work on them, clear the blockage, and then the neurological symptom goes away. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's Kundalini related because of, you know, what's happening.
Well, bless your heart. That's wonderful.
Spiritual growth. Well, yeah, I interviewed a lot of the people that did the early work on that, to figure out what the kind of, you know, if you had this type of blockage, what symptom would you have? But this is a time when we're going to be getting a lot of psychiatric and neurological issues from spiritual awakening. I mean, I think Yogi Bhajan talked about that before he died, that this is a time of, he said this is a time of keeping up, which is a great way to say there's just too much going on. And then he said you'll see a lot of neurological and psychiatric issues that can't be diagnosed with the normal, you know, it's not a brain tumor, it's not a, you know, it's not a nerve problem, but yet it's a serious neurological or psychological issue.
Well, and, you know, what I love about having done this for almost 30 years with people, being a therapist, is you can also really work it psychologically, and suddenly it all just falls into place and opens up.
Right.
So it is kind of, and, you know, energy work may be part of what I do, but, you know, you can also really go into the belief systems and the stuff I'm talking about in this book, and that could shift mm-hmm. everything, and suddenly you've opened up to this deeper place, and you're not having those psychiatric symptoms.
Right, yeah. Well, that's very important, though, because traditional medicine just doesn't have the answer, and all
mm-hmm.
it's going to do is give you some medication that's going to cause tremendous blockages in your spiritual development, so you will never get over the hump that you're, you know, that are causing the symptoms. You know, it'll put you backwards, you know.
And as a therapist, I have to be very careful as a licensed therapist in the state of New York.
Right.
And I also agree that some people need to be on their antipsychotics so they can mm-hmm. do this work. That
right.
they need these antipsychotics, or they're living a life that's not real. They're seeing people that aren't there. They're walking through walls. They jump off buildings.
Right.
They kill themselves or somebody else.
Right. That's true. But, you know, just to put people on medication without really understanding what's going on, especially the antidepressants
mm-hmm.
Or the anti-anxiety drugs,
yep.
there's better ways to treat those issues than, I mean, I agree if somebody's terribly suicidal or so anxious they can't live their life, it's an emergency and you've got to do something with medication. But, you know, I really think people that are on long-term psychiatric medication, they don't really, it's not really right for what's happening to them. They block their spiritual path. It seems to be the case.
You know what, you're so right, and I'll tell you what makes me crazy as you're talking. I get this as a bee in my bonnet, is that the insurance companies have really messed up, you know, and they don't want to do, all they want to do now is behavioral health, and they want mm-hmm. people in and out in 10 sessions, and nobody gets anywhere. It's just Band-Aids mm-hmm. on everything. This is why I wrote this book. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a path.
Right.
Our life is a path which requires our consciousness, which requires our attention. And nobody, yes, you might get over a quick little thing like you're talking about, an emergency, but why would you even get into an emergency is the question. And if you're in an emergency, there's something deeper going on that needs to be examined, which is exactly what you're
right.
talking about. People need to talk about it. People need to work it. And that's how you change consciousness. Not doing 10 sessions of behavioral health. Doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. Well, that goes back to my mother, an operant behavioralist. You know, that's the physical model, that if you just control the behavior, everything will be okay.
Yeah, that's not, yeah. I don't see that
that's
as
not
true.
That's not quite true. It's a very physical observation, you know. In a truly just a physical world, nothing else, then controlling the behavior might be, you know, desirable. But you're right. We're so much more than just the physical aspect.
Well, and the truth is, very there's no such thing as just the physical by itself.
Right.
That's why your energy
works. Well, the operant behavioralists believe that that's the prominent one, the one you have to deal with.
I know.
That's a, yeah.
I know. I been doing this so long and have mm-hmm. had tremendous success with people and have had, you know, things and people change that other therapists have said to me. I mean, a therapist said to me the other day, I can't believe this poor guy. I wish he'd come to me for supervision or something. He said, people don't really change. He goes, if you talk to some 80-year-old wise person who's a therapist, I said, are you mm-hmm. kidding me? People change in my practice all the time. People change mm-hmm. all the time. It's completely possible. Is it fast? If it's a long-term problem, maybe not. Maybe they have to stay focused on it for a while. But people don't mm-hmm. change. People change every minute. You know?
Right. Well, the idea that people don't change is a belief system. So those therapists who believe that will attract the people that aren't going to change.
I know.
And then that reinforces their belief system. So, yeah.
Well, and I'm famous for taking successful people. I mean, I love all kinds of clients, but I love taking people who are incredibly successful at what they do, and they'll come to me, and they'll have this whole thing sewn up. You know, well, this is this, and this is that, and that's this because I do this, and that's blah, blah, blah. And I take the whole thing and turn it on its ear, and mm-hmm. it crumbles, and they go, whoa. And they see, wow, this isn't at all what I thought it was, you know.
Right,
And as long as you're willing to keep digging, as long as you're willing, and sometimes it doesn't take forever. I say it takes a while, mm-hmm. but sometimes all I have to do, like I did with this person this week, he said, oh, I don't have much to talk about because I just did this and this and this and this. And, this. And I said, wait a minute, why do you think this is true, and what does that mean? And anyway, the whole thing went, whoop, and he went, whoa, I guess it wasn't what I thought it was.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah.
Good. Well, would you like to give your contact information?
Yes. I hope everybody comes and says hello. And it's been so wonderful talking. We're not done yet, are we?
Well, no, but I want to get it in.
Good. I mean, just like, wow, just time went so fast with you. So my name is Dr. Jennifer Howard, and there's drjenniferhoward.com. And the book has its own website, which it keeps up by itself. No, I'm kidding. It does it by itself. My book is so smart, it can do its own website. YourUltimateLifePlan.com. I'm glad you know I'm just being silly. YourUltimateLifePlan.com, and there's two free chapters there for people to read, and then you can purchase the book right through there. And, you know, you can follow me on Facebook, / Dr. Jennifer fan page. On Twitter, I'm at Dr. Jennifer. And would love to hear from you if you get the book. I think this book can be for most people. I don't think it's for people who don't want to read.
Although you can put it on the old Kindle and it will read it to you.
There you go. No,
people don't realize that, but it's true.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
Yeah. The new Kindle won't read you the book.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
There's so many practices in here that I think people will find something that they can identify with. And I've had a lot of people mm-hmm. already email me with a lot of ahas from this book because it mm-hmm. does. I do ask so many questions and so many. And we're creating a workbook, too, that's even going to go deeper. So we're in the middle of creating that. So if people get on my mailing list. And also check out my radio show. I interview some really great people. I talk less than I did today.
Well, you're being interviewed, so that would be good.
Then you're sweet to interview me. So it's drjenniferhoward.tv/radio. That's the radio show.
Great.
So
who are some of the interesting people you've interviewed?
Well, I had the Lama Surya Das on again. I've interviewed him maybe three times, so we talk and we chat about things. It's fun because I like to go deep with people like we did today. And a lot of the book, Tara Brach's new book, when she came out, Sharon Salzberg, when she relaunches her meditation book, she comes on my show. Rabbi Rami Shapiro, Andrew Harvey came on twice. He's coming back again in June because we're still talking about his book. I've had Bruce Lipton, Sonia Choquette, it's terrible now. I'm going to leave people out and I feel bad about it. I'm having Guy Finley on. Guy Finley on next week. I'm so excited about talking to him. He gave me a wonderful endorsement, and he loves the book, so that's exciting. And I have a lot of great people on, and they're just smart as whips, and it's fun to... And I knew I was going to like you. I was like, I'm going to like her. I looked at your credits and everything. I was like, I'm going to like her.
You know, Bernie Siegel...
yes, I had him on.
...wrote something on the back of your book, and he wrote something on the back of my book, too.
What did he write on yours?
I was spiritually guided to send the book to Bernie, who, as we know, is a cancer surgeon at Yale, and my book's on the naked truth about breast implants, and I email him the book because Spirit keeps bugging me, you know, send this to Bernie, send this to Bernie.
Right.
And so Bernie emails me back. He says, Susan, we have people in our family with that HLA type. I never knew this could cause this. So he learned something from the book. Isn't
that's
that incredible?
So wonderful.
I know.
You know, I don't understand. Now, so what you're saying is these are breast implants that people choose to have, or are these breast implants that people... I've got to get your book now. Are these breast implants... I don't have breast implants, thank God. But are these ones that people choose to
you
get?
You have a
or
hip implant, though. You have
what?
A hip implant.
I do.
You have a hip... Yeah, well, it's similar. I mean, the things you need to know when you have an implant are very similar.
Well, I've got to get it and read it. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I put this dead gum thing off as long as I could, my hip. I tried everything.
Well,
I went to every healer.
There's a reason for that. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I have breast implants, so, you know, it's not this. I'm not anti-implant. I'm just pro-education as to what you need to do. Like when you get your teeth cleaned, you might want to, you know, be on, especially a deep cleaning, you might want to be on a few doses of antibiotic. You know, it's a good idea. Things like that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Avoid mold, you know, because if you get you sleep on a moldy mattress, that biofilm around your implant can get mold in it. And then you get neurological problems.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just stuff.
Well, I got to have you on my show.
People with implants need to know. Well, I'd be happy to come on. We can talk about
all
sorts
of stuff. You've got to come talk about your book. Well, that's so important to know.
Yeah. Well, most people will... You know, whether it's a dental implant, a breast implant, a testicular implant, a VP shunt, you know, a pacemaker when you get older, most people will probably be faced with potentially having an implant if they live long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I mean, we're really not anti-implant. I'm a medical doctor. I put implants in. But, you know, we have to know what it's about and also be spiritually guided. There's a lot of spiritual guidance that goes into when you do this, as you know.
Absolutely. I knew it was time, and I had the astrologer pick the perfect day. I had
I do that, too.
I had a healer come in to the, God bless her, I haven't talked to her in years, come in my recovery room, and it
That's
was fabulous.
Wonderful.
And changed the vibration of my hip to match my body.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
all of that. Yep. Well, you went through it then. That's great. You followed your guidance.
Well, and people think people think new. They think they get a joint replacement and it's like a new hip. It's not.
No, it's not.
It has limitations. It won't move the same way your other hip will, and you have to deal with it.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's why you don't just jump into it without checking out all the boxes, you know, that you need to check off.
Absolutely.
Well, we are coming up to the end of the hour. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been it's great reading your book, and I think it's a wonderful resource for anyone on the planet right now. How's that?
Thank you so much.
So, you want to give your contact information one more time?
Absolutely. The book is Your Ultimate Life Plan. It's yourultimatelifeplan.com. You can reach me there. DrJenniferHoward.com. at Twitter, I mean, at Dr. Jennifer on Twitter, and fan page, Dr. Jennifer fan page on Facebook. And so thank you so much. So wonderful to meet you.
Well, thank you. Same here. I enjoy meeting you as well. Next week, we have Christine Page, The Healing Power of the Sacred Women, Health, Creativity, and Fertility for the Soul. And then Dr. Eric Love will come back, Healing the Emotional Component, on the 6th of April. Wynn Freeze coming on to talk about the raw material, that's RA material, 413. And we have an interview with Dr. Joseph Mercola, Strategies for Eating Healthy and Weight Control, on the 20th. We have the Abraham Hicks Meetup Group every Wednesday at 7:30. Kent Boxberger is doing that. We have a plastic surgery free lecture on breast implants, what you need to know. Dr. Gordon and myself will be doing that on the 26th at the Dunwoody office. And Noetic Science is the third Thursday in April, and Paul Esch will be hosting that with his information about devices that can help you with spirituality. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Have a great week and join us next week.